Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, at an interview, February 26, 2013.
What we've spent the past 4 years doing is putting in place is something completely different, an approach that's more efficient, risk-based, and designed to detect, prevent, and respond to a range of threats, from terrorist attacks to natural disasters. This approach is built upon the notion that in a world of evolving threats, we can no longer be simply reactive or isolated. We have to leverage information to identify threats sooner, target our security measures to areas where they will have the greatest impact in decreasing risk, allocate our resources according to risk-based priorities.
Not 7 weeks after Janet Napolitano's interview, where she spoke of a new approach, being more efficient, risk-based, and being able to detect and prevent terrorism. April 15th, at the finish line of the Boston Marathon.
Had an attack. Oh, my God. My God. Oh, my God. God.
Fidels to another episode of America Akbar. We are definitely having some blog talk issues tonight. I apologize. Hopefully this is recording, and if nothing else, you can listen to the podcast afterwards. This is not a night to have problems. I'm just going to get right into it, and before we even do anything, I just want to say from everyone here at Radio Jihad, and I know from our listeners, our thoughts and our prayers go out to not only everybody in Boston, but everybody in Texas as well. And I would like to do a moment of silence for the three people that were killed in Boston on Monday. We had Lingzi Liu, who was a 24-year-old grad student from China, 8-year-old Martin Richard, and 29-year-old restaurant manager Crystal Campbell. We're going to do a quick moment of silence, and we'll be right back. Thanks, everybody, for putting up with that, and hopefully you feel the same way I do, and they deserve a lot more than just a moment of silence. But without further ado, let us get into the show. It is going to be one hell of a show tonight, so let me introduce the other half. Say hello, Reese.
Hello, Reese.
Reese, we are having some major issues. I have the chat room open in a separate window, so you're going to have to be my chat goddess tonight because, not that you're not every week, but I can't bounce back and forth between my notes and the studio and the chat room because I only have one computer.
I understand that and totally.
Okay, now I just want to jump right in. First, I'm going to give out our phone number. Then I'm going to talk about tonight's guest. And we are so lucky to have this guest on tonight. So let me first do the phone number. And everybody, please feel free to call in at any time. Here you go.
Area code 347-857-1380.
347-857-1380. Or if you want to try your luck at the roulette wheel, go ahead and push the Skype button on your computer because Reese and I have been receiving a message in the studio mode. And you have to understand that when we're on Blog Talk, what we're seeing is actually a studio setup with all of our phone callers and our chat room and our audio clips. And we keep getting this big blue message across the top that says we're experiencing a major outage and you might want to reschedule your show. Well, I can't reschedule my show. I just got an email from our guest tonight, and this just, wow, it's still blowing my mind. But let me tell you about our guest, because tonight's guest is Dr. Ferez. Now, Dr. Ferez is an advisor to the U.S. House of Representatives on counterterrorism and has been since 2007. He's also the co-secretary general of the Transatlantic Legislative Group on Counterterrorism since 2008. He taught global strategies at the National Defense University in D.C. since 2006. He lectures at the National Intelligence University since 2008. And he has also been a professor of Middle East Studies, Ethnic and Religious Conflicts at the Department of Political Science at Florida Atlantic University from 1993 to 2006. Professor Ferez has also been a senior lecturer on the War on Terror and Global Conflicts at the LLS program of the Florida Atlantic University and also the IRP program at the University of Miami. Previously, he taught at Florida International University from 1991 to 92 and at St. Joseph University in Beirut back in the 1980s. Waleed Ferez is a senior fellow and the director for the Future Terrorism Project at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies in Washington, D.C., and he's also a visiting fellow with the European Foundation for Democracies in Brussels. Now, you probably all know him as the Fox News terrorism and Middle East expert, which he's been doing on both MSNBC, Fox News, NBC since 2003. And as recently as tonight, he's going to be on Fox News. The email I just received from him told me that he's going to disregard being on Sean Hannity tonight to be on my show. So we had originally planned to have him on. He said he'd make it around 9:15. So we figured after our 9 o'clock break, we'd bring him on and have him for the rest of the show. I wrote him back. I said, if you could please make it a little bit earlier, I'll bring you on right after 9 o'clock. The email I got back from him, as always, in his very polite way, calling me sir, he said, I'm going to disregard Sean Hannity and be with you at 8:45. So I did shoot an email off to him asking him very politely not to bump Sean Hannity on my account. I'm still a little boggled that he even would do that for me. But it is possible he'll be here at 8:45. If not, he'll be here around a little after 9. So either way, we've got my mentor, my idol, the man who I believe, without a shadow of a doubt, is the most knowledgeable and number one leading expert in the world of counter and anti-terrorism. So, you know, everybody sit back and pull up a chair because it's going to be one heck of a show, both once he's on as well as before he gets on. But joining us tonight, as usual, I've got my usual, it's become a rabbinic sidekick. I've got my rabbi with me. How are we doing, Rabbi?
I'm doing okay. Did you say sidekick or sidecock?
Sidekick. Sidekick.
Oh, okay.
Yay, yay, yay. You know, and you would, you know, my mom
That's
just passed away.
That's an old Mel Brooks joke.
Yes, I know. My mom just passed away, as you know, Rabbi, in January, and she would be so proud of me to think that I have a rabbi at my side every time I do my show. It's almost like you're keeping an eye on me, making sure I don't do anything bad.
Somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. You're absolutely right. Well, before we get started, I want to play the news out of Israel from Israel Today magazine, as usual. And I'm just going to bounce over real quick and make sure that is everybody in the chat room hearing me? This is my big question. Hopefully we've actually got volume and sound here because I don't see too many people in the chat room given our guest tonight. So hopefully that'll fill up and people are just having issues getting in. But let me play the news.
Rabbi, I don't know if you were catching that, but it sounded like Gotti went garbled on us.
Yeah, it sounded like it went south real quick.
Okay, he'll pop in whenever he ungarbles and what have you. I think it's on his side because I wasn't getting garbly earlier. and he's going to try and clear it up over on his end. He was to say it's going to be a busy night. There he is. Yeah, I got that, did you?
Sounded like an alien talking.
I know, it's all garbled.
I have problems.
No, you're going to want to press the news for now? Yeah, I can't understand what you're saying. In fact, Gotti, if you have windows open, I mean, other windows outside of what you're immediately using for the show, if you can possibly close those out, like if you have Facebook or anything like that open that will take up bandwidth, that might help a little bit. In the meantime, and I think we've totally lost him now, Rabbi.
I'm here. So, oh, no, man, he's still struggling there.
He needs to Skype me so I know what he wants me to do for him. In the meantime, it's going to be a busy night. He's got a lot to talk about with the happenings of the week, as well as preparing for bringing in Dr. Waleed Faris, who I'm afraid for you to refresh too. Just be patient because last time it cleared itself up on its own too, Gotti. I'm just letting him know. But we have Dr. Waleed Faris coming in, and, you know, we've had him on several times, and not only is he a mentor of Gotti's, but he is also somebody I hold in high, high regard information-wise and as just on a personal level. I think he's a fabulous person. So I'm looking forward to having him back. It's been way, way, way too long. And he says, go ahead and play Israel Today News if I can locate it. And we will get on with that. Let's see if I can find it. I scroll through a lot of stuff to get to that because he moves things around, but I don't. Okay, here we go. Here's the Israel News Magazine news for today. And without further ado.
Reporting from the Israel Today newsroom for American Akbar with Gotti Edelman. From Jerusalem, I'm Jonathan David. Israel on Tuesday sent its deepest condolences to the people of Boston after two terrorist bombs killed three people and wounded 183 others at the finish line of the Boston Marathon a day earlier. Israeli humanitarian aid organizations also offered to dispatch assistance to first responders and medical staff dealing with the aftermath of the tragedy. By contrast, members of the Palestinian organizations Hamas and Islamic Jihad reportedly danced and handed out candies in the streets of Gaza after hearing about the spilling of American blood. Islamists in neighboring Jordan told local media that the Americans deserved such terror. The chief of emergency services at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, the hospital that treated the bulk of those wounded in the Boston Marathon bombing, credited Israel with preparing his staff to effectively deal with such a scenario. Dr. Alistair Khan said that 2 years ago, he had invited Israeli experts to train his staff on handling mass casualty situations. That training was put to good use on Monday, and Massachusetts General was widely praised for the way it handled the situation. On Tuesday, the U.S. Senate overwhelmingly voted in favor of adopting a resolution stating that America will support Israel should the latter decide it's necessary to attack Iran's nuclear program. Israel had grown concerned that should it become necessary to strike Iran's nuclear facilities, the Obama administration would not lend its support either morally, logistically, or materially. Obama's appointment of John Kerry and Chuck Hagel as Secretaries of State and Defense, respectively, had only deepened that concern. The 40 years of quiet on the Golan Heights are over, said Israeli Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Benny Gantz during Israel's Independence Day celebrations on Tuesday. Gantz explained that in light of the numerous recent cross-border attacks from the forces participating in Syria's ongoing civil war, we are preparing our borders in the north with advanced and tactical obstacles, but we are also aware that we can be attacked from the air. Israel's new Minister of Defense, Moshe Ya'alon, added that both Hamas and Hezbollah in Lebanon are preparing for war with Israel. He said that both Hezbollah and Hamas have brought in tens of thousands of rockets of various types and are just waiting for the right circumstances to fire them at Israel. One of the signs that things are changing on the Golan, for decades Israel's quietest border, is the behavior of the UN forces stationed there since the Yom Kippur War as observers and peacekeepers. Following several assaults on UN personnel, the world body is ready to pull its people out rather than to do their job preventing a border flare-up. Meanwhile, Israel is preparing for the day after the fall of Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad, with the expected eruption of chaos and the likely withdrawal of the international forces meant to separate warring Syrian factions from the Israeli army. This situation, together with ongoing instability in Egypt, means Israel is facing a strategic shift in the Middle East. And both Ya'alon and Gantz emphasized that Israel is preparing for the worst. Two missiles slammed into the southern Israel resort town of Eilat early Wednesday morning, causing damage to a residential area, but miraculously no injuries. Area children who had only recently arrived for school were rushed to bomb shelters. Israeli forces said the missiles were fired from the Sinai Peninsula, where various regional terrorist groups, including Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda, are known to have set up shop in recent years. From Jerusalem, I'm Jonathan David. Stay informed. Pray informed. Check out IsraelToday.com.
And we are back. Sorry about that. BTR buttons were going really slow. And as soon as Rabbi's button comes back to be able to be pressed, I will get him on. In the meantime, bear with us as we are dealing with a show. When BTR suggested that we not have a show, we are trying to plug through this show simply because we have a very special guest on who has rearranged his schedule to be on our show. And therefore, I would really like to, and we're really trying hard to get through this. Be patient, folks. If you hear, silent moments, just be patient. We will keep trying to come back in. And I'm telling people that, just be patient. Be back. If anything, if you lose it, give it a few moments and refresh. I am doing my best to make sure that we have sound throughout the night. And cross fingers, prayers, light, whatever you want to do. Let's put some positive thought towards the show, and hopefully we will be able to get something in soon. Gotti is trying to get back in as quickly as he can. What he did is he ended up trying to refresh so that he would be ungarbled, and it knocked him out. So, again, bear with us tonight. We are dealing with BTR had some major issues that they're trying to fix, and they had they told everyone who are having shows tonight to cancel. And there's Gotti, and he is back.
Oh my God.
Okay, well, I just rambled, but I'm letting everybody know that because BTR has stated that they're having major issues and they're working on them, trying to get them fixed, and they had recommended for all shows to cancel for the night, we chose to try to plug along because we did have a very hard-to-get guest on, and he is such a special guest that we're going to just try and get through this tonight, especially since Dr. Waleed Ferris did rearrange his schedule to be here even more so. So bear with us, folks, and just be patient and refresh and, you know, plug along. It's going to be one of those nights. Okay, you're as garbled as you were before. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to our 8:30 break a little bit early to introduce a new song from our favorite, Toots Sweet. He has a new song out on his album. And so we'll go ahead and play him. We'll take another break. And hopefully by then we'll have Gotti ungarbled. In the meantime, here we have one of our favorites, Toots Sweet. And he has put a spin on the old song, Johnny Comes Marching Home, and has made it his own. And I hope you like this. I think it's a fabulous rendition, and it's a new twist that is very up-to-date and quite refreshing. So here we go. Toots Sweet, Johnny Comes Marching Home, and you can find him over at tootssweet.com.
When Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah. When Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah. We'll all stand proud and sing a song when Johnny's back home where he belongs. And we'll all stand tall when Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching home. The door from that day on, he's a soldier, much bolder. He's a great American warrior.
Welcome, fellow infidels. Gadi Edelman here with America Akbar Radio. If you're only listening to the radio show, you are only getting a small piece of what we do around here. You need to get over to GadiEdelman.com, GadiEdelman.com. There you can read my weekly articles that come out every Monday. You can check out my videos, and you can link up to a bunch of other great sites and really stay on top of things. So once again, for everybody here at America Akbar, keep on listening, and thanks for your support.
Hey everybody, this is Dave Bray of Madison Rising, and you're listening to America Akbar with Gadi Edelman and Reek on Blog Talk Radio.
Hopefully, Risa, you can hear me.
I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
All right. I'm getting feedback on my telephone.
Just letting me in through the studio. I don't know if you see that. My mic is hot up there.
I do. I see that.
All right. Wait a minute. Let's see if I can do this. Hang on a second.
I don't know if this is working. Can you still hear me?
Do you want me to put you on the phone on the home? Or fold on phone on hold?
Yeah, put my phone on hold.
Okay, can we hear you?
I don't know.
Can you?
I can hear you. Are you echoing still?
Put
your phone down and just talk through your microphone. But don't hang up your phone just in case.
I hung up my phone.
That is still very jumbled, and I would strongly encourage you to keep your phone on instead because you're coming through very jumbled with your Skype into the show.
How are the people in chat room hearing you? Because someone in chat room is saying there's no sound at all.
Paul, refresh. People need to refresh. If we go out, and I'm going to keep reminding people, if we go out, please refresh and give it a few moments and refresh because when he drops out, I have to press another button and it takes a moment for it to start back up again. So we either refresh or use the default player and please wait for a moment with the default player or even refresh the default. So I'm telling people that. But, Dottie, you're still really garbled, so I strongly encourage you to use the phone so people can hear you. It's just the garbly thing is not working. Are you there? Hello? See? And that's, yeah, the garbly thing is not working, and he's back out again. He cannot vocalize. Rabbi, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Oh, excellent. Okay, well, I finally was able to get your button to work. It's one of those nights. I tell you, when it rains, it pours.
We had nothing but problems on our broadcast last night. About 45 minutes into the broadcast, we actually had to cancel the rest of the broadcast because it was so bad. But if you want, I can cover some of the news until Gadi gets back.
If you can, please, because I'm trying to get him back, but I'm encouraging him to use the phone because he can't understand me. I can't understand him with his Skype connection is not working tonight. So we need to have him in clear so when Dr. Waleed Fierce is here, it actually is clear and everybody can understand everything.
Yeah, and just so you know, don't hit the mute on your end. I'll mute myself on my end because my mute actually works.
Yeah, I was going to say, once I get everybody on hot mics, I'm not taking anybody off of hot mic, and I will just hope everybody can be hushed so that during breaks and stuff, just because of the fact that it's gotten to the point where I'm afraid to press a button and lose somebody.
Yeah, and I have a mute button here, so... Okay, I'm going to stay away from certain subjects because I don't want to step on Gotti's foot because I know he wants to talk of them. I'm going to cover some of the things that are going on in Israel and around the Jewish world, such as Dutch anti-Semitism watchdog group raises the alert. The Dutch anti-Semitism watchdog organization, CIDI, which is the Center for Information and Documentation on Israel, has filed a complaint with the Dutch court following a light punishment by the Dutch prosecutor's office for anti-Semitic remarks and praise by Dutch Turkish youths for Hitler and the Holocaust. The move came after death threats followed a television interview that featured the four youths expressing their views to volunteer community workers Mehmet Sahim in the Dutch town of Amhem. Sahim was since forced into hiding. After the youths expressed praise for the Holocaust, Hitler, and the murder of Jewish babies in the interview broadcast in February on Dutch television. Now, remember that they have very severe laws there on hate speech, except when it comes to certain groups. The prosecutor's office of the Dutch Ministry of Justice found that only one, a 15-year-old youth, had committed a crime by making unlawful anti-Semitic remarks saying he hated Jews and that he was satisfied with what Hitler did to the Jews. The teen admitted to police his remarks were unacceptable and offered an apology, said the prosecutor's office, which meted out only an educative punishment, requiring him to work with an organization that fights anti-Semitism and discrimination. That's going to work. Yes, that'll work. So anyway, so it basically, to the Dutch, if you speak out against Islam, then you are going to receive from some extremely severe punishments. But if you speak out against Jews, and I am assuming that this is no different for Christians, they are going to get off with light punishments. Moving on. Now, this is the only one that I'm going to deal with as far as the recent events. This comes out of Egypt. This is a radical Egyptian cleric who stated on Egyptian television that Boston bombing meant to send a message. You think? The radical Egyptian Salafi cleric said that the terror attack in Boston was meant to tell the West that terrorists are alive and well, as if we didn't know that already. And, of course, if you've been listening to Gotti's show for any length of time, you've been very aware of this for a very long time, too. A radical Egyptian Salafi cleric said that the terror attack on Boston this week was meant to send a message to the West that terrorists are alive and well. The cleric, Sheikh Murgan Salem, also warned that similar attacks were expected in France. Salem, doesn't London have a marathon coming up too? I believe they do. I believe that was one of the fears going on, that this was going to be replayed. I think it was in London. Anyway, Salam made the comments during an interview on Tahira TV on the 16th. The interview was translated and posted on the Internet by the Middle East Media Research Institute, which is Memory. Obviously, I do not know who carried out the operation. If it was done by the Mujahideen, it serves as a message to America and to the West. We are still alive, he said. Contrary to what you say, we did not die. The Americans wanted to send a message to the entire world that they had finished off the Mujahideen, not just the Mujahideen of Al-Qaeda, but the Mujahideen all over the world. I do not know who carried out this attack, but if it was indeed Mujahideen, it was meant as a clear message to America and to the West, continued Salem, who said that the terror attack was not up to the standards of Al-Qaeda. It was extremely amateurish. The standards of Al-Qaeda are much higher. The cleric goes on to say that he was like one family with both former Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden as well as current leader Ayman al-Zahiri. From what I saw on the news, said Salam, this was the work of amateurs. I do not know who did it, but they have managed to get the message across. We can reach you whenever and wherever we want.
Let me know when I can cut in, Rabbi.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. I was just filling space for you.
No, and I appreciate that. And I'm beginning to wonder if we should even continue. I keep getting messages on my screen whether to end the episode or continue because I'm not connected. It's rather a bad night, to say the least.
I'm just continuing to press the button, and we'll keep moving forward as long as you're willing to move forward. I'll keep pressing buttons.
Oh boy! Oh boy!
You
know, right.
I think Gotti, that you know, as important as this subject is, and you have got probably one of the best guests to actually talk about this, I would take the chance.
Well, I hope that the podcast works because I'm still seeing in the chat room where people are losing sound. So I'm not sure what's happening, but
well, every time you drop out and we have to click on that button as quick as we can, because then they lose sound at that point. And I think if they're using the default player,
now you're
they
garbled.
She sounded fine on my end.
See, this is crazy. I'm listening on the telephone, so I'm just hearing it, but. Anyway, let me continue with this, and we'll just keep on plugging. I wanted to talk about Abdul Al-Harbi. Now, this is the Saudi kid that was called a person of interest. And you guys may remember that Monday night, the night of the Boston bombing, they said that they had a person of interest who was here on a student visa. He was a Saudi Arabian. He had burns to his legs, and he was in the hospital. Now, on Sean Hannity's program last night, Steve Emerson, who probably everyone has heard of on my show, Steve Emerson is another terrorist expert, and he heads up IPT, the Investigative Project on Terrorism. He cited his sources as saying that Abdul Rahman Ali Al-Harbi, the Saudi national who was briefly named a person of interest in the Boston Marathon bombings, is going to be deported next Tuesday. Then Reuters said they started reporting that Obama met with the Saudi foreign minister in an unscheduled meeting yesterday. And this is an exact quote from Reuters. U.S. President Barack Obama met with the Saudi foreign minister, Prince Saud Al-Faisal, at the White House on Wednesday and discussed the conflict in Syria, according to a spokeswoman. However, the meeting was not on Obama's public schedule. Reese, if you would, because I can't push any buttons that are going to work, do you see the one that says Steve Emerson on the Saudi National?
Okay, I'm going to have to scroll down. Hopefully it's at the very bottom so I can find it easier.
Well, it's AA, and then it's titled Steve Emerson on Saudi National. It's a one-minute clip from Hannity's show last night. I want everybody to listen to what he says about this Saudi National.
Steve Emerson, Saudi National. Here we go.
Now, let me throw in another curveball here, which is going to make news. Remember the Saudi that they initially had arrested or at least detained, and then they I reported yesterday
the Saudi
that they
National.
Had no. Yeah, the Saudi National, Al-Harbi, and then it was determined he had no, there was no involvement, and they made a statement to that effect. Well, I just learned from my own sources that he is now going to be deported on national security grounds next Tuesday, which is very unusual because...
Whoa. You learned that that Saudi national is going to be deported on national security?
That's right.
Hang on, because Reuters did have a report tonight that I found odd, and that was Obama was meeting with the foreign minister, Prince, earlier tonight, and it was not on Obama's schedule. Reuters reported that.
That's very interesting because this is the way things are done with Saudi Arabia. You don't arrest their citizens. You deport them because they don't want them to be embarrassed, and that's the way we've appeased them.
Well, excuse me.
All right. So what you have is this Saudi national that we know was there at the bombings, obviously. He was standing by what I believe was bomb number two and ended up in the hospital with burns to his legs. Now, in light of these new revelations from Steve Emerson, that the Saudi national, who was quote-unquote a person of interest in the Boston Marathon bombings, and just so everybody knows, he's identified by his full name as Abdul Rahman Ali Isa al-Salami al-Harbi. He's being deported on, quote, national security grounds. Now, why is he no longer a person of interest? Well, here's something in English that has been translated from a Saudi Arabian newspaper, and it's a paper called Okaz. And this is the translation. Ambassador to the Royal Crown, Abdel Ben Ahmed Al-Jubeer, had several phone calls with the paper as well as with the royal family. He stated that very high-ranking U.S. government officials stated there is no suspicion of any Saudi nationals relative to the Boston Marathon explosions. The Saudi Consul General in New York, Abdel Karim Al-Kin, assured the Okaz, that's the newspaper, that all Saudis have been cleared and that two Saudis were injured, including Al-Harbi and a Saudi female doctor by the name of Noura Khalid Salih Al-Jali. Now, Prince Saud Al-Faisal, Prince Abdul Aziz bin Abdullah from the Foreign Ministry, and Prince Khalid bin Saud were all involved in the entire affair. Three other Saudis were cleared from the forbidden area, two of which were put in a hotel at the expense of the Saudi consulate. Al-Kin disclosed that he cleared the three Saudis from the forbidden area and housed two of them in a hotel. The third stayed with a friend. He also met with a group of Saudi students, telling them to carry on with their lives and that the Saudi ambassadors would handle everything. These students were also told not to cooperate with any media and to lay low, end quote. That's right out of a Saudi newspaper. Now, at another site called Sabiq al-Haribi, Sabiq al-Haribi's father talked about how a member of the al-Dwarzi clan, Ali al-Dwarzi, visited his son in the hospital. Now, for those who don't know who Khalid al-Dwarzi is, Khalid al-Dwarzi is a Saudi national. He's a student and an al-Qaeda terrorist who planned to use weapons of mass destruction in the United States, including an attempted assassination of President Bush. Al-Dwarzi was not a lone wolf. He was backed by the entire system, the wealth and powerful al-Dwarzi clan. Now, includes the powerful sheikh Saud bin Mutab, who hosted a support group for the terrorists defending him publicly while funding his legal team. Now, everybody has to understand the role of the Saudi clans becomes important. Abdul Rahman Ali al-Harbi belongs to a clan that consists of several al-Qaeda members, and he belongs to a clan that consisted of one man who attempted to assassinate George W. Bush. Many from al-Harbi's clan are so deep in terrorism and members of al-Qaeda that on a Saudi website, on a list of 85 terrorists, it's listed by the Saudi government, it shows several of his clan that have been active fighters in al-Qaeda. And if you were to go to that website, and I'm just going to read it as I've got it in my notes, number 15, Badar Sud al-Harabi, number 73, Muhammad al-Harabi, number 26, Khalid Salim al-Harbi, number 29, Raid Abdul Salam al-Harbi, number 43, Abdul Abdullah Abdul Rahman Mohammed Al Harbi, who's the leader of a group. Number 60, Fayez Guman Muhammad Al Harbi. And then you have various Al Harbi clan members who are also already in Gitmo. And I'm not even going to bother to read all their names because I'm going to choke. But there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, at least 9 that are already presently in Gitmo. These are, pardon me, there are specific, and I've got to see what Reese is sending me here. Apologize to everybody. Reese, hang on a second. There are specific Saudi clans that are members of Al-Qaeda, which makes it quite alarming as to why nearly 100,000 student visas are issued to the Saudis. The Americans are clueless as to clan ties when it comes to terrorism. This morning, Glenn Beck revealed on The Blaze that The Blaze was informed by sources that the Saudis' national visa had been revoked and he was, in fact, going to be deported on, quote, security and related grounds, end quote. Among other things, sources told The Blaze that the Saudi national had ties to a well-connected Saudi family and that his deportation was set to be framed as a voluntary departure. Now, a file that they've named an event was started on this kid 3 days ago. While discussing the issue on the radio this morning on Glenn Beck, The Blaze's chief content officer, Joel Chetwood, revealed that the government is now considering not to deport Ali Al-Harbi. Now, today, Homeland Secretary Janet Napolitano had an exchange with Representative Jeff Duncan during a House hearing over the reports that Al-Harbi is being considered for deportation. And Napolitano refused to entertain a question regarding if it would be negligent to deport someone who just days ago was a person of interest. If you would, find the audio. It's very brief. There's an audio in there called Jeff Duncan Napolitano. Representative Jeff Duncan Napolitano, and play that for us. Let me know when you find it.
Looking for it, sorry. Keep talking while I look for it.
And to answer your question, yes, Waleed Ferris just emailed me again, and right now we're playing email tag, as it were, and I'm going to let him know whether or not to call in. So at this point, I'm going to ask him to call in just after 9. We can take our 9 o'clock break, and we'll have him in. So
yeah, I was just saying.
To bounce back and forth like this. It's really, really pissing me off, and people have no idea what it's taking for me to keep my cool right now.
What is the name of the file again?
REP, Representative Jeff Duncan Napolitano.
Is it under AA?
No, REP. Oh. It's under R. I didn't put the AA in front of it because I moved it to the top, and on my screen it's at the top.
Yeah, it's
not. I can click the button, but I don't know if it's going to work. Let me try first.
Yeah,
let me try. Hang on.
Appreciate that. Let's shift gears a little bit because I'm very concerned about this person of interest that was detained at the hospital in Boston following the Marathon Madness. He is, I believe, scheduled to be deported next week. And now I understand he's been cleared of any wrongdoing in the involvement in Boston, but he is being deported due to national security concerns. And CBS says this gentleman is here on a student visa. He was at the scene along with many other people when the blast happened. As everybody's standing in shock, 3 Boston PD detectives see this guy moving quickly out of the crowd. As they're watching him, he seems to be moving very deliberately, which could be a very natural thing after a bombing. They stop him because he's covered with blood. They end up taking him to the hospital. That's straight off CBS. And we're asking average Americans to help ID and assist law enforcement in identifying who the bomber was. See something, say something. And now we have someone who is being deported due to national security concerns, and I'm assuming that he's got some sort of link to terror or he wouldn't be being deported. He was at the scene. He could possibly ID the bomber, just like we're asking every other American that was on the scene to provide your pictures, help us identify who may have been acting funny. Everybody, we're asking that was in Boston, and we've got this guy who was there. We know he was there. He was arrested, was detained in the hospital, covered with blood. He was at the scene, and yet we're going to deport him. So we're going to remove
him from the scene. I am unaware of anyone who is being deported for national security concerns at all related to Boston. I don't know where that
rumor is. I'm not saying it's related to Boston, but he is being deported.
No, I don't even think he was technically a person of interest or a suspect. That was a wash. And I'm unaware of any proceeding there. I will clarify that for you. But I think this is an example of why it is so important to let law enforcement do its job.
I want them to do their job, and that's why I say, wouldn't you agree with me that it's negligent for us as American administration to deport someone who was reportedly at the scene of the bombing, and we're going to deport him not to be able to question him anymore? Is that not negligence?
I'm not going to answer that question. It is so full with misstatements and misapprehensions that it's just not worthy of an answer.
Well, CBS reports the gentleman was there. We did detain him at the hospital. He was covered with blood. We've cleared him of any wrongdoing, but it has been reported he is being deported on.
There's been so much reported on this that's been wrong, I can't even begin to tell you, Congressman. We will provide you with accurate information as it becomes available.
I look forward to that. Thank you. I yield back.
You know, this is the bullshit that our government is trying to shove down our throats. I'm not going to answer that question because it's so full of misstatements and misapprehensions. Oh, so he wasn't there? Really? He just ended up in the hospital with burns on his legs, telling the hospital staff that he was there. We have photos of him there, video of him there, but he wasn't there because there's been so much reported in the news that's been wrong. And this is why we just need them, you know, to do their job.
But we want the citizens to help. Two or three weeks ago,
when we spoke on this very show about how the Saudis are on the fast-track visa program now, and I said what a mistake it was. Just 3 years ago, they were placed on more restrictions, and it was tougher for them to get into the United States because so many of the hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. But no, under the Obama administration, not only were all those restrictions were taken away, but now they were added to the fast-track visa program where they can actually be put on a list so that they can just come right in without even going through any checks whatsoever. Like countries that we have certain relationships with, you don't even need a visa to enter the United States. Doesn't that give you a warm and fuzzy that our administration right now wants to let Saudi nationals into the United States without any checks? Oh, but I'm actually misrepresenting the truth. They'll be checked. They'll be checked by the Saudi government. Not by our people, not by Americans, not by our administration. No, they'll be checked by the Saudi equivalent of our State Department to be cleared to be on the fast track program. This kid has definitely got ties to this. There has been numerous photographs and numerous articles. Whether he placed the bomb there or not, I have no idea. I saw the press conference tonight with the FBI. I saw the video they showed. It's difficult for me to decipher. Could he be one of those two in the video? It's possible. You know, the dark skin, very, very grainy video or a long shot away picture. Yes, he's the right age group, but what have I always said on this show? Statistically, terrorists are 18 to 34 years old, male of Middle Eastern descent. So whether or not this kid was one of the bombers, whether he was a lookout, whether he helped plan it, whatever his part was, if any, now all of a sudden he's going to be deported. And when questioned about it, our administration said, it's national security, we can't talk about it. Well, why would he be deported? If he was cleared of any wrongdoing, why is he being deported? Why did President Obama meet last night with the Saudi minister to the United States, the foreign minister to the United States from Saudi Arabia? These are questions that have to be answered. It's Benghazi all over again. I don't like what's happening, and I can't wait to bring Waleed in to ask him about this Saudi connection. I know where to go online, pardon me, to find a the instruction manual, if you will, to build a bomb out of a pressure cooker. I talked about it on this show last year, Inspire magazine by Al-Qaeda. But we have people like Janet Napolitano sitting in front of Congress saying, oh, that's not their style. That's not the way they do things. Really? Because I wrote an article about the Inspire magazine article on how to build a bomb in your mom's kitchen. That was the title of the article. And it talked about utilizing, didn't talk about it, it told you to utilize a pressure cooker. It told you how to nails, to take nails and glue them to the exterior on the inside, pointing out, to glue them to the inside facing out of the pressure cooker and to pack it with ball bearings or BBs. It's right there. It's still on the internet, Inspire magazine. It's in English by Al-Qaeda. But, yeah, that's not their style. After Monday's bombing, I received no less than 3 Facebook messages and emails, as well as a phone call from the rabbi right here, saying, didn't we just talk about this a week or two ago on the show? Soft targets and what was going to happen? This is exactly what I spoke about. I didn't predict this. One of the emails I got said, didn't you just predict this? No, I didn't predict this. What I predicted was that something like this would happen. Obviously, I had no idea it was going to be at the Boston Marathon. But like I brought up on Vito and Alan's show on Radio Jihad on Monday night, where in the hell were all the bomb-sniffing dogs? This is what bothers me the most. Because anytime you have a gathering with that many people, sporting event or otherwise, you bring through the bomb-sniffing dogs. And nobody is going to tell me that a city the size of Boston who has a bomb squad doesn't have half a dozen to a dozen, if not more, bomb-sniffing dogs. And if the dogs were there, why weren't they there throughout the race? How come on all the videos of the explosion that I saw, I didn't see one police animal, one police dog, until after the explosions happened? They should have been walking up and down that line. This is basic common sense, SOP, standard operating procedure in any security for any event. And Americans, this is what I've been talking about. Somebody puts a bag down at your feet and walks away. I'm sorry. I know that those that were standing in close proximity to that bomb, the ones that were right there, are liable to be among the dead or are liable to be among those that lost limbs. Up, America, if you don't want to end up dead or in the hospital, if you see somebody put a bag down and walk away, clear the area and call a cop. We have put together, I've said 100 times on this show, that it is the citizens of this country that are the first offense. Oh, man, oh, man. And by the way, just so people know, I don't know how many of you heard this because it wasn't in the mainstream media, but back after 9/11, George Bush set up a $20 million, doesn't sound like a lot, $20 million fund to prevent IEDs in the United States. Improvised explosive devices. Guess who cut that budget almost in half, from $20 million down to $11 million. And no, it had nothing to do with the sequester. This was done a long time ago. Obama cut the funding to it. So when they try and start pointing blame on the white supremacists or on sequestration or the Republicans or the conservatives, you can point it right back at Obama for cutting the funding for IEDs in the United States in half. That's where we are. Reese, if you'll take a break, I'm going to try, I don't know if it's going to work, but I'm going to try and call in our guests to the studio from the studio. So if you want to put on a quick break, I'll do that on the side.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? I got some new stuff from Colleen Gray, and we all love our Colleen Gray around here. And her latest, well, it's not her latest, she's had this out for a while, but she did a great cover for Dust in the Wind. And you know what? I think it's a little apropos for tonight. So here we go. We're Dust in the Wind by Colleen Gray. You can find her right now over at ReverbNation.com under her name, Colleen Gray, and that's Gray spelled with an A. And here we go.
Hey everybody, this is Dave Bray from Madison Rising. Help Madison Rising keep the banner flying high and show everyone that you are one of the millions of hardworking people in this country that are still proud to be an American. Take the challenge at www.starspangledbannerchallenge.com. That's starspangledbannerchallenge.com.
It is Thursday between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern Time. What are you doing? Well, if you're like me, George from the American View, then you're listening to Gotti Edelman of American Art Bar. You know Gotti, short guy, reflection on top, a smart man.
Okay, note to self, I can't snap my fingers while the music's playing because I get my cat and two dogs running at me. Anyway, I think we've got everything finally straight. I think Blog Talk has come through at the last minute, and hopefully people will listen to the podcast because we've got Waleed Ferris coming on, and I believe that that is probably him. So let me just open up his mic and find out. Dr. Ferris, is that you?
Hello, good evening, Gaddy. Thank you for having me. Yes, it's me.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for putting up with one heck of a night. We have been having such technical difficulties, and I got your email, and to say that I was flabbergasted that you were going to bump Sean Hannity for us, I was tickled pink.
Oh, no, but I won't do it with Greta. I'll be tonight at 11:40.
Okay, so everybody be watching Greta. Now, that'll be 10:40, won't it? Because she's on from 10 to 11.
Actually, they extended one more hour, so it's special for today. I will be at between 11:30 and 11:40, exactly.
Well, let me real quick introduce you. I read your bio at the beginning of the actually, I only read part of your bio. It's so long, but Dr. Waleed Ferris, who we all know from Fox News as well as many other places, I cannot thank you enough for coming on, unfortunately under horrible circumstances, and given the fact that we have however much time you have available, I just want to jump right into things, obviously talk about Boston. What I've been talking about mostly tonight, Waleed, is the Saudi connection and this individual that was a, quote, person of interest that all of a sudden was no longer a person of interest. And now we're finding out that Obama met off his schedule. It was not scheduled. He met with the Saudi minister last night. This kid is being deported. Now they're backtracking it. The administration is saying maybe he's not going to be deported. Do you have any insight as to what all this is about when it comes to this Saudi that's here on a student visa?
We really don't have a lot of information except how foggy it is, how unclear it is, and that's the real story. You know, from the beginning, he was considered as a suspect. He was defined as somebody who's at the hospital. And then thirdly, it was said, sources have said, that he is going to be deported on the basis of national security. Now, all of that has changed. Number one, from sources, now I'm giving you sources, the embassy is saying that he's not going to be deported. He's actually going to go back to his classroom or work, whatever he is. Number two, that he is not really at the hospital. And number three, you know, the Saudi trail doesn't exist anymore. Now, how many sources are talking about that the meeting that took place between our leadership and Saudi leadership had to do with this? Really, we can't confirm or infirm anything because the administration was not very, very clear on what was that case. But having said that, there should be no trail, you know, left aside. Everything should be explored and be in a very fair way. Now what we're hearing tonight, increasingly, is that there is another trail, possible trail, to Pakistan.
Right.
To the Lashkar-e-Taiba group, which is a very radical jihadi group, which, by the way, coordinates with Al-Qaeda in the same way Al-Qaeda and the peninsula, and the Arabian Peninsula coordinates. So at the end of the day, it seems that now we are leaving my assessment of 50% domestic, meaning American extremists, and the other 50% is all of the jihadi network, both American and international, to really focus on something most likely that could have an international link, although it could be based in the United States. That's so far what we have on the issue.
Right. So basically, I mean, it's up in the air. It could be a lone wolf or a couple of people that got together to do this, or it could be an international connection. I mean, so we're basically still at square one. It's only been, you know, 3-4 days since the bombing, and yeah. And we know it's not like CSI or NCIS, yeah, where they solve it in an hour episode. And
right.
And it could be months before we find out. But some of the things that are really bothering me, and I know this has got to bug you, you know, I talked about on this show, and I wrote an article last year about an article that was in Inspire magazine, How to Make a Bomb in Your Mother's Kitchen, where they talked about utilizing a pressure cooker and gave blow-by-blow descriptions and, you know, even drawings of how to go about doing it. And yet we have people within the administration today stating, oh, this isn't Al-Qaeda style, this isn't how they would do it.
Yeah.
Al-Qaeda is the one who put the article out in English on how to make a bomb from a pressure cooker.
Absolutely. No, that one, you are absolutely right, 100% right. What is incredible is how the people who are supportive of the administration's doctrine that Al-Qaeda is going down, Al-Qaeda is ineffective, we killed Bin Laden, we killed Al-Awlaki, academics, think tanks, leaders, people going in the media, and by the way, even in the international media, claiming, oh, this is not how Al-Qaeda operates. Al-Qaeda operates with planes and trains. I mean, come on. We're not in kindergarten. Kids who are online today knows more about that. The Al-Qaeda manual, actually the Central Al-Qaeda manual, as you just mentioned, teaches their own recruits that every single type of weapons is open for business. Every level of sophistication or simplification, as long as you can kill the quote-unquote infidel and the enemy, you could go for it. What these expert, non-expert are trying to say is Al-Qaeda is like a regular army. They have an air force, they have heavy artillery, they have tanks, and that's how they should operate. No, nobody could tell Al-Qaeda how they should operate because they're going to use everything they have. And you know, you're a terrorism expert, that guerrilla forces, including Al-Qaeda and the international jihadi network, actually in their manual and online, and now on Facebook, you just mentioned the weapon, the kitchen, I call it the kitchen weapon, the one that you mentioned in Inspire magazine. I have seen it today. I was researching on Facebook in multiple places, most of which are Salafi jihadis.
Absolutely. And you know, it's not that hard. Anyone, even, you know, Al-Qaeda aside, can go on the internet. I was telling someone yesterday that if you had the plutonium, you can find the instructions on how to build a nuclear weapon on the internet. Everything is out there. What bothers me is the fact that this was allowed to happen. And I know that sounds stupid. It's not Israel where I grew up, where it's a little bit easier. And I said a little bit, but it's easier to keep an eye on the entire country versus a country as massive as the United States. And I realize that. I realize it's a different culture here. But people standing by, letting someone just put a bag down and walk away, I can't believe no one said anything or did anything. And it just blows my mind. Where were the bomb-sniffing dogs? Where were the police? And I think May troubled again. Go ahead, BC. Or Rabbi.
Rabbi, go ahead and take this, if you will, so Gotti can get his sound back.
Okay. I'm not sure where he was going with that. But Dr. Ferris, are you still there?
Ah, crap. Oh, sorry, and I said that on air. we lost Dr. Ferris as well because Gotti fell out.
Okay, while we're waiting to try and get Gotti and Dr. Ferris back, one of my big questions has been this Saudi national who is now is and is not being deported and all this and that and the other thing. In the meantime, it was flying around all of the social media networks or websites about these two young men, that the one in the blue jacket and the one in the white hat, that were being called out, and the New York Post actually identified them as the two men that were that the FBI was actually looking for. They say they were misidentified, and the one they know to be a high school track star. But
right, and I'm trying to get Dr. Ferris on as well, because he just dropped as well.
Hello?
Hello. Dr. Ferris, are you back?
Yes, I am back. I am back with you. One minute.
Thank you. Yeah, we're getting Gotti back. He is on hold, and I've just got to get it to where it pops up. But in the meantime, we have Rabbi Nachman here that you can communicate with.
Okay, very good.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Nice. Dr. Ferris, it is pleasure to speak with you.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you.
I have been listening to you for a while, and this was my first opportunity, so I was not about to miss this. You were talking about the young member of the Saudi family that isn't being deported, whatever the case is now. I was just making the comment that we had these two other young men that were supposedly misidentified by the New York Post, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And we know the one has been identified as a local track star. I'm wondering, have you heard anything about the other one?
We don't have really any information. The only leads that we have now after the press conference is that those two individuals may have links to Pakistan. Why? Because we are learning from sources that the government is asking the Pakistanis to identify a list of names. Now, when that happens, then we as analysts look at the possibility of a link between the list and the two suspects. So we have two tracks. We had the Saudi track with this young man. It seems that this track has reached a level, and then we can't move forward because the U.S. has declared him as a non-suspect. And now we have those two persons with their faces and with the pictures, and that's where we are in the investigation.
Okay, but I think you're talking about the two that the FBI has absolutely said these are two potential suspects that we're looking for.
Yes, the ones that everybody now has been seeing, it's on all over national TV and internet. Those two persons with the black hat and the white hat are the official suspects advanced by the FBI and authorities. Now,
right.
In parallel to that, there has been a request by the U.S. government to be confirmed, of course, to the Pakistanis. So if you combine both, is it those two persons? It is possible.
Okay. So I'm still trying to clear up in my own head these other two that were identified earlier. They were misidentified.
Yes.
And looking at this thing, there are certain questions that jump out at me. The one young man, the 17-year-old who was the local track star, actually went to police to clear himself because he saw himself on the web, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And said, you know, I had nothing to do with this and all this stuff. But I have not as yet seen one single word about the other young man that was with him.
Yes,
there seems to be an absence of information on him, and these two seem to have at least known each other to some extent.
That is correct. I don't have more information about this first track, the two unknown persons that you guys just mentioned, and therefore I cannot answer about that second person. We really don't know. It's the same way we don't know much about the Saudi young man because that trail went cold, meaning went dead. There are no more questions because we base our assessment on what the government is finding. There are no private sector investigators on the ground. And the government combines two things. Number one, the security of the investigation, the stability of the investigation. They don't release much information. And then you have the policy of the administration. I mean, the administration can also ask the agencies and law enforcement to release more or less because there is an assessment at the higher level of the National Security Council, of other circles, that determines in what direction we're going to actually take this investigation.
Yeah, I was actually very surprised, and I actually wrote to Gotti yesterday and said, you know, while the Boston PD and the FBI are asking for the public's help, but they won't give a description, they won't say anything about it, but they want their help.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, you know, okay, you want people's help, but you don't want to give them any information so that you can get help. However, you sit back and you allow people to speculate on potentially innocent people being involved in this, and throwing these red herrings, letting these red herrings out there, and then 48 hours later come in and kind of clarify things.
And I got bumped. I apologize.
Oh, and there is Gotti.
This has been, it's Murphy's Law, Dr. Ferris. Anytime I have someone on that I have any high regards for, which is namely only you, this is what happens.
Gee, thanks.
Not to worry about it. I do have a few more minutes because I have to prepare to go back to Fox and to other networks, international ones. So I was just discussing that my finding at this point in time is that the government delayed announcing a lot of information, probably because at the law enforcement level, they did not want to intercept, to have a public search going in parallel with the government, because that could endanger the process. But when they felt that they have no more information, this is the timing of the press conference that is now asking the public to give them more information. And I also added, when I was discussing with the rabbi, that it seems, this is not certified nor confirmed, that now there is a third trail. We had those two first-person suspects, then we had the Saudi trail, and now we have a Pakistani trail.
Yeah, now tell us about this Pakistani cell, for those that aren't familiar with this group.
Well, I'm going to repeat this on Fox, but let me give you the appetizer now. There is an organization, which is out of Pakistan. It's a jihadi organization that is part of Al-Qaeda. It's a hardcore, very old jihadi organization that is known to operate mostly outside Pakistan. It's based in Pakistan. It has done a lot of attempts and assassination and killing inside Pakistan. They have been involved, allegedly, in the attack in Mumbai. But for the last 12 years, they have had a lot of activities in Britain and in the United States. The earliest activity we can recall was in 2002. There was an attempt for a training camp in Virginia. And the government has arrested a number of people, including the case of Ishmael Royer, who was part of, and he was an American-born, by the way. And along the war on terror in on the homeland, we had cases of LET, it's called LET, Lee Ashkar Taiba, of individuals who wanted to bomb New York or other cities in the United States. So that is a trail the government is most likely looking at right now.
Well, you know, it kind of surprised me, and I agree with you 100%, as usual, but I agree with you 100% on the reason the FBI, you know, yesterday they canceled two different press conferences, and then today they finally came out and they showed the video, they showed the pictures of these two individuals, and it kind of tells me that they have nothing but the photographs, because with today's technology that I'm familiar with that our government has, they can use facial recognition software, which would go through everything, including passports, people entering the country, driver's licenses, you know, you name it. And if they could not utilize that on the two photos they have, it makes me wonder how these two people got in the country, because they've got to be somewhere. Either they're Americans and they have some type of identification, or they came in from overseas and they would have a visa. So it made me wonder, you know, why is the FBI going that route finally now, saying, okay, we need your help? It has to be that they have nothing at all other than the photos.
That's very logical. That's very logical. And I don't think the FBI would say otherwise, because they are. This is a form of a poster with wanted. I mean, we want to talk to these people. We have the assumption that they are involved in this. And since the trail stopped at that point, what better than having 10 million American citizens looking around instead of having 50,000 FBI staffers? And that's not bad to do this. But the issue is that there should be, in my view, a better explanation to the American public about the bigger picture. You know, American public has been floating between all these talking heads in the media over the past 2-3 days about all sorts of things, about, you know, some people were talking about tax day. I mean, what tax day has to do with this if this is a jihadi operation? And I have been on international media, and in many places around the world, it was the same talking point memo, quote unquote. Some quarter in America has been sending memos of explanation of what can that be around the world, and media was lost. European media was lost, Arab media was lost, as if we had no war with al-Qaeda. But anyway,
exactly.
I think that in the next few hours, in the next few days, based on the fact that now the public is going to help, and maybe other countries are going to help based on the pictures, we may move a little bit forward.
Well, I sure hope so. I really, really hope so. My biggest fear, obviously, is that these two are never either going to be identified or they're long gone. And hopefully they're still in the United States somewhere and they'll be able to be brought forward. And hopefully, you know, the truth will come out, because I've seen so much with this administration. Don't even get me started on Benghazi. It's a whole other show.
No, but, I know what you're
you
saying.
Know, I don't know that we're ever going to find out the truth, or if the government is going to want to come out with the truth given our current administration. And that's my, you know, that's my fear. And after 9/11, we saw everybody on 9/12 become Americans. There wasn't a flag to be found anywhere in the store, because everyone bought one and had it on their cars and their houses, and we were all Americans. And I'm not seeing that now. And it scares me that we've gotten to the point where even if it comes out and they say, yep, it's terrorism, yep, it was Islam, it's not going to change anything. And that's my fear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for Benghazi, let me close on this point, Gadi. I think the truth is there, is in Libya, is in those 10 training centers of the Salafi jihadists, including one militia, Ansari Sharia, that claimed it. And we are not going towards that truth. We're going away from it. So it's not that it's completely alien to us. It is there, but probably there is a decision not to open that file and re-engage in confrontation with the jihadists in Libya, because that would open other and other Pandora boxes.
Exactly, exactly. Well, Doctor, I know that you have to run, and you're scheduled to be on Greta later tonight, so everybody look for him on an extended Greta Van Susteren on Fox News at 11:40. Is that correct? That's when you'll be on?
Yes, 10:38 to 10:40 on, yes.
Okay. Well,
I mean, 11:38, 11:40 on. Exactly.
Wonderful. Doctor, I cannot thank you enough. You and I will talk in the next few days, I'm sure. Thank you once again for clearing your schedule this evening to be with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. And I would like to thank the rabbi as well.
Thank you.
It was an honor to meet you.
Honored to talk to you. Thank you.
And that was Dr. Waleed Fares, everybody. Rishi, I have totally lost the studio. I cannot even see what is going on. But if you'll do me the honors of putting something on for break.
No, I want you to just kind of flounder about for a little bit.
I hope people listen to the podcast, because we are down to a handful of people in the chat room. And I see in the chat room, which I still have up, surprisingly, I can still see the chat room. But a lot of people were having a lot of problems getting any audio at all. And I just hope that the podcast works, because Dr. Waleed Fares is just so informative and so knowledgeable. And having a man like that on the week of a terrorist attack anywhere in the world, let alone in the United States in Boston, it's just amazing, and I really hope that the podcast works. So
I do too, because, you know, he had a lot of great information for us, and he gave us a couple of sneak peeks to his, what he's going to be talking about in Greta's show in the 11 o'clock hour. So, you know, folks, run over to Greta in the 11 o'clock hour and see what else he has to say. And again, thank you, Dr. Fares, for joining us and putting up with our chaos here.
Oh, you're not kidding. And hopefully that won't leave a bad taste in his mouth for next time. And hopefully it'll just be, you know, this one incident with Blog Talk. But somehow I doubt that.
I don't know. But that's okay. We've got you through me, and everything is going to be good. And we're going to go to a song here a little bit. Gadi, when we do, if you want to run out or whatever, go ahead and mute your Skype. That way you're muted, because I'm keeping my button hot, so that during the break we're not worrying about losing it.
Okay. I forgot that I could mute my my mic here on Skype. So, yeah, we'll do that, and we'll be back right after this. Who do you have coming up song-wise?
Well, believe it or not, I have Steve the Balladeer on, and he has a great song, A Little Peace of Mind. And you know what? I think we all can listen to this song, and after tonight, I think we need to have this song. So here we have Steve the Balladeer, A Little Peace of Mind, and you can go find him over on his romanceinsorrow.com. So here we go.
I was walking down a city road, and I had praises on my mind. I was singing for the only Lord, and I was praying for a little peace of mind. Then I saw you, such a pretty girl, the one I hoped that I would find. Eyes as beautiful as a magic pearl, and I was praying for a little peace of mind. Then you came to me and took me by the hand. They say that love can make you blind. I stepped into the promised land, and I was praying for a little peace of mind. What becomes of our fantasies? How does the perfect love grow cold? Why am I sinking like a sailor at sea? Where is my silver and gold? Where is my silver and gold? Where is my silver and perfect love grow cold? Why am I sinking like a sailor at sea? Where is my silver and gold? Where is my silver and gold? Where is my silver and gold? I was walking down a city road, Lord, and I was praying for a little peace of mind. And I was praying for a little peace of mind. And I was praying for a little peace of mind.
Well, it doesn't appear like that is going to work for us. So, you know, no ad break for this moment. It'll pop in probably just about the time that somebody else starts to talk besides me. Folks,
I forgot I had my mic muted.
I was going to say, folks, thanks for hanging with us in all our chaos and you know, BTR glitches and what have you. They are working on it. They apologize. Is BTR-wide this issue? They have been working on it. They did suggest people rescheduling their shows for tonight. We decided to plug through because we did have a special guest on. And I'm glad we did. It was stressful. It was obnoxious. But it was so nice to have Dr. Ferris on with us for a little bit.
Lisa, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I had my mic muted. I forgot. And I was trying to get in after the song ended. But I'm sorry. It's been one of those nights. I apologize to everybody. You know, hopefully soon, if you're going to want to listen to Gadi Adelman, it'll be on INTN when we finally get Israel News Talk Network off the ground. So I'm going to plug my own little show there if, you know, when that happens, and invite everybody to go to IsraelNewsTalk.com. So it's in the works. I had given a little teaser a few weeks ago about it and said that, you know, Israel News Talk Network was getting off the ground and we were getting the funding we needed, and that's still in the works. It is still going forward, and I am very excited. But it'll be nice just not having to deal with these technical issues anymore.
Yeah.
I realize this is live radio, but Blog Talk has given me more gray hair. I know people, I don't
gray
have
hair. Hair. You don't have any hair.
But I have a beard. And in my goatee, I have had more gray hair than I'm starting to look like Santa Claus. So we'll just put it that way. Oh, boy. I can't, you know, I'm back in the studio, but I can't see who's on hold and who's not. Is the rabbi on hold?
Rabbi's still there.
I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, Rabbi, thank you for jumping in and taking over when I got bumped and while he got back in before I did.
I'll tell you what, I was not prepared for that. I hope I didn't come off like a rambling idiot.
Well, I think it's kind of good with the night.
No, I didn't even get to ask him. Everything I did was off the fly, and I apologize to everybody. I didn't even ask him the questions that I had written down for him. Because I couldn't, I'm afraid to touch anything on my computer right now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the when you do the news at the beginning of the show?
Yes.
And that's done by Jonathan David?
Yes.
Does anybody realize how long Jonathan David has been around?
No.
I remember Jonathan David back in the 1980s when he was doing the news on Jerusalem Today.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It just dawned on me because I know I had recognized his voice and I couldn't quite place it. And then tonight it just kind of suddenly dawned on me. This is Jonathan David who used to do the news on Jerusalem Today back in the 80s.
I know the owner of Israel Today magazine, not personally. We have not met, but we've communicated quite a bit via Skype and email. And I don't know all the different people that work for him. I've been to their website. I'm not familiar with the operation. For all I know, they could be doing it out of their house in Israel, just like we do it here on Blog Talk. But, you know, the fact that they do the news every day and they send it to me every day. Now, what we heard tonight was 4 minutes. Normally, it's only 2 minutes. And I took yesterday's news and today's news because it was so interesting. The comments that they had about Israel, you know, and the United States and the bombing in Boston and the Golan Heights, I wanted everything in there. So I doubled up on the news from them. But, yeah, I'm not familiar with Jonathan David outside of this. I didn't hear of him until – but you have to remember, I came back to the States in 1981. So, you know, if he was doing news from Israel in the 80s, I probably didn't even hear it.
I just thought it was interesting. I also wanted to point out, you know, we had the Boston incident, we had that Ryson incident right after that, and then right on the tail end of that, we had this explosion in Waco at the fertilizer
Texas,
plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, which turns out to be an industrial accident.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
people, please, you know, you guys know that I don't believe in coincidences. But I will say this, for lack of a better term, I hear Reese on the mouse keyboard again.
Sorry,
and
I'm mute.
We can, no, you can't mute because it'll mute me, won't it?
Nope.
Ah, okay. Well, please understand, you know, right after 9/11, we had the anthrax scare. And I am telling you now, people, this bit with the ricin has absolutely nothing to do with Boston. There is no big, giant conspiracy theory. If anything, this nutbag with the ricin was copycatting what happened with anthrax days after 9/11. He did it days after Boston. And if people actually think about it, he probably even mailed those letters prior to the incident in Boston, because anytime you mail a letter to a senator or a congressman or the White House, it goes through a processing center like it did where they caught it for this very reason. It doesn't get there in 2 or 3 days. It goes through an entire checking system. He may very well have mailed this stuff a week ago. So stop, you know, if you're one of those people that believes that it's all tied together and it's this big conspiracy, stop it. I'm telling you now, the two are not connected in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, just be that as it may, I had to get that off my chest.
Well, just to continue on with my thought, and I know you don't believe in coincidences, but you know I do. I don't think there is any such thing as coincidence. Okay, so, and as you pointed out, in New York we had the 9/11, and then we had the anthrax deal. Boston, we had the explosion, and then we had the ricin.
Right.
In New York, but remember, New York, we suddenly had that big blackout.
Yes.
Which turns out to be, it was a overload of the system, and the system wasn't prepared to handle it, and it blacked out a huge section of the United States. And here we have today that huge, devastating explosion in Waco, Texas. I'm not connecting either one of them. I'm just saying that it's interesting that the series of events copies almost exactly what happened after 9/11.
Oh, yeah, I see your point, yeah, but it's not a connection to any of them.
No, absolutely not.
What happened in Texas, and that's why I wanted to begin the show by saying our thoughts, our prayers, and our hearts go out to all these people. There were a lot more people killed. Not that it matters. If one person dies, it's bad enough. But there were more killed in Texas than in Boston. You had possibly, we don't know yet, possibly even more injured in Texas than in Boston.
Right, they're
what
still
I
looking.
Know, and something else I need to get off my chest, call it a little Gotti rant. I don't have my mute button, and I'm chewing while I'm talking to everyone, and I apologize. But I've seen over the past week all these so-called experts on terrorism. It just cracks me up. After 9/11, I was screaming at my TV because it seemed like on 9/12, no matter what channel I turned to, they had a quote-unquote expert on terrorism. It was like the terrorism expert world had a population explosion overnight. Because I sat there screaming at my TV, if we had all these stinking experts, where were you on 9/9? You know, 9/10, what happened? Where did you come from? And all of a sudden, we had all these armchair experts. I have seen more pundits and more of these so-called experts over this past week talking about how rudimentary the explosive device was in Boston. That is bullshit. And people need to know that. And pardon my French, but I don't care whether they used a tin can and gunpowder or an M80, when people die, when you have mass casualties of that sort, especially in a public area at a public event that is so crowded, it's terrorism. And terrorism is terrorism, period. They set out to perform terrorism. And by every definition of the word terrorism, that is exactly what they achieved. It doesn't matter whether only 3 people died. Anyone that has gone online and seen the photographs, go to my Facebook page and look at my profile picture where I wrote, this is what terrorism looks like.
I have trouble even watching the replay of the video because it takes me back to when I was 14 at the bombing I survived. It doesn't matter if they used a tin can, a pressure cooker, or a giant nuclear weapon. People died. People were maimed. People lost limbs. People lost loved ones. And this is the true definition of terrorism. And I'm adamant about that. It's a pet peeve of mine. I've written articles about the difference of things than when they refer to it as terrorism, and it's not. This was terrorism. Go to my articles and look up, I don't remember the exact title of my article because I've written so many and I apologize, but something with the title about not every act of violence is terrorism. I wrote an article about that. And in there I put my definition of terrorism, which I wrote just after 9/11, because people were throwing the word around like they throw the word Holocaust around, and I hate it when it's misused. It's a pet peeve of mine, and forgive me, but what we saw in Boston was terrorism, plain, simple, period. You can have a terrorist act where no one dies. That was terrorism. And you know, our hearts go out, and I went off on a tangent, to the people in West Texas, and that's a city in Texas. It's not in West Texas. West Texas is the name of the city. And it'll be days before they even finish checking these homes and apartments and the nursing home. It demolished an area, I've heard, anywhere from 5 blocks to 5 miles. And it's horrible, as any event. But what happened in Texas was a tragedy. What happened in Boston was terrorism. And there's a huge difference between those two words. There's a huge difference between those two meanings. One was accidental. It was a tragic event. Doesn't make it any less harder for those that lived through it. But if we don't use the right vocabulary, if we don't straighten these stupid pundits out, we are never going to defeat terrorism if we can't identify the enemy. And this is the problem. So forgive me for ranting about that. That's my little Gotti rant for tonight. Difference between a tragedy and a terrorist act.
Well, you know, they've been calling these bombs rudimentary, too. I mean, what is rudimentary? Anytime you use a cell phone to remote detonate a device, that's not rudimentary.
No.
You know, a firecracker is rudimentary. An M80 is rudimentary.
And I pointed out, Rabbi, Monday night, before anything had come out, before there were any photos of any circuit boards, if you recall, on because you were there, on Radio Jihad, on Video on Allen's show, on Monday night, I pointed out that it was most likely cell phone detonated. And I even explained that as soon as he set off one, he went and redialed the other, and that's what took the 15-second or 30-second, I guess it was about 15, 20 seconds, between the two blasts. And I
right, we had actually even talked about the cell phone service being shut off right after that.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Well, I'm going to call it a night. We're about 10 till the hour. I know it's a little early, but given the problems we've been having with Blog Talk, I think that it's only appropriate that, you know, poor Reese's probably as bald as I am. She said she was pulling her hair out. So I appreciate you coming on, and as usual, Rabbi, saving the day for when I wasn't there, managing to stay online the whole time. And I'm glad that you got to meet and talk to Dr. Waleed Ferez, and we'll definitely have him back on in the future.
Good.
Reese, are you still on mute?
No, I just unmuted because you told me to.
Hi, Reese. Do you have any hair left?
Well, one thing, I think I need a tall glass of something happy.
Tall glass of something happy. Well, you heard it here first, folks.
And I want a raise. I mean a really giant raise. One
okay.
So big.
I will raise.
I will put up with this again and again and again.
Listen, everybody on the show, this is going to be on the podcast. Everybody pay attention. I'm going to double Reese's salary. From everyone pay attention. From what she is currently making, I will double it. So we're going to go from zero. What's double a zero? Oh, zero. There you go, Reese. You just got a raise.
Isn't that an old cat skills joke?
I'm in a giving mood. I'm going to triple your salary. How's that?
Three times zero is what? Zero. Hallelujah. I'm still making zero.
Rabbi, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart, because during the time when I was garbled and I couldn't log in and all these blog talk issues, you truly were there to keep the show going as usual. Reese, thank you so much, and I'm sorry that you pulled all your hair out. If you can find the outro music, and I
yes, I can find that.
Yeah, it says AA Akbar outro. If you can Akbar outro us, let me know when you have that button and you're ready to click it, and we'll do our good nights.
Okay, I'm ready. My finger's over the button. Just tell me when to go.
All right. Rabbi, you have a good evening, and thank you again.
Laila Tov.
Laila Tov, Rabbi. Say goodnight, Reese.
Good night, Reese.
Go ahead and hit the button.
Fighting jihad before it was cool. Warning of terrorists and Sharia rules. Speaking truth to power on the radio, a lighthouse in the storm to his fellow infidels. America, Akbar, fellow infidels.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.